Hey, Prime members, you can listen to America Changed Forever ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you can have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
CBS presents America Changed Forever with CBS News correspondent Jeff Pegues.
This past week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis threw his hat in the ring for President of the United States. He launched his campaign on Twitter with Elon Musk, and while there were some snafus, we're not going to focus on the rollout of this campaign, but the substance of the campaign.
Our border is a disaster. Crime infests our cities. The federal government makes it harder for families to make ends meet, and the president flounders. But decline is a choice. Success is attainable, and freedom is worth fighting for. Righting the ship requires restoring sanity to our society, normalcy to our communities, and integrity to our institutions.
The Florida governor is now one of the most popular figures in GOP politics. If you go to Florida and talk politics, chances are you're going to run into a lot of people who just love his policies, tough on border issues, taking on woke culture. Not sure what that means, but okay. DeSantis has become a clear rival to former President Trump, and Mr. Trump is doing what he can to derail the DeSantis presidential aspirations. The NAACP is weighing in on DeSantis's presidential ambitions as well, telling Black Americans, avoid Florida. The NAACP has issued a travel advisory for the state. Joining me now with the exclusive interview is the president of the NAACP, Derek Johnson. Thanks for being with us.
No, thanks for having me.
All right. So what exactly do you mean by travel advisory? Are you telling Black Americans to avoid Florida? What are you saying?
We're saying travelers beware, that this governor and the legislative body of the state of Florida have enacted a series of policies that could potentially cause harm to African Americans, the LGBTQIA plus community, and many others. And unfortunately, it is done in a backdrop of African Americans coming out of COVID, but also recognizing on this very day the recognition of the killing of George Floyd. In order for this nation to be its best, we must embrace all of its citizens and not develop policies to exclude some of its citizens.
Clearly, you don't believe that the current governor of Florida, DeSantis, is a welcoming figure in terms of some of the legislation he has signed into law, especially as it relates to Black Americans.
what he has done is play to the lowest common denominator of humanity. And many groups are responding to that. In fact, Disney, the corporation, one of the largest employers in the state of Florida, just withdrew a $1 billion development because of his ongoing attacks on individual liberties, access to voting, and many other policies. Just the exclusion of diversity and inclusion training as being a part of what the state of Florida should pursue, and banning of books. These are all things that create an unwelcome environment for African Americans, for women in some cases, and unfortunately for children. It's almost like the Salem witch hunt. You go and you ban a bunch of books that really make our history a much more robust reality because it's sharing our history from different perspectives and it's inclusive. And the very nature that he will want a sterile view of our history, of our present and our future, it is troubling to say the least.
But is it just the governor? Because if you look at public approval ratings, he is incredibly popular in the state of Florida. And even his policies seem to be popular in the state of Florida. How do you respond?
Well, if you understand the history of African Americans in this country, slavery was popular in the state of Florida when it was enacted. That across the South, the institution of segregation was popular in the state of Florida and other states across the South. Was that moral? Was that humane? Was that even democratic or American? So popularity contest of an individual has very little to do with our decision to determine if citizens could truly appreciate equal protection under the law and can be assured that their very existence would not be seen as something to erase. Those are things that we are concerned about as an organization, as a community.
Well, if you're so concerned about it, why not just say, hey, boycott the state of Florida, don't travel there? Instead, you've said you've issued this travel advisory.
Well, we are in this position because of the election. We won't change the current political climate until an election. And as NAACP, we have a large number of members in the state of Florida who said we need to do something, but don't abandon us. We have a lot of partners in the state of Florida who say that something must be done and we need to organize on the ground to prepare for the next set of elections because the solution to this will not be found in the courts. The solution to this will not be found in demonstrating and protesting alone. The solution to this will be through elections. And many individuals had already prepared to be there. So boycotting would be the right approach because many companies are also under attack, like Disney. So we are in this unique position to amplify the problems that he and other policymakers in the state have created, but recognizing the need to be ever vigilant in our fight to ensure that democracy works for all. Equal protection under the law is afforded to every citizen, and we don't abandon the people who are residents of Florida who must still live in this reality.
All right, so let's talk about the upcoming presidential election in 2024. You have Ron DeSantis now. He's thrown his hat in the ring. Officially, he is a legitimate candidate in the Republican Party. He trails only the former President Trump. What do you make of the Republican field and the policies that they are espousing?
Well, for many individuals, citizens across the country, we have to ask ourselves, do we want to go backwards to a Trump-like landscape where hostility and othering became such a norm that it emboldened individuals to display their racial hate, their ethnic hate, their religious hate in the public square, which germinated to become what we've seen on January 6th. Do we want to try to recreate a 1950s existence that it was sterile of diversity? Or do we want to look forward to a future that's inclusive of the makeup of the citizens who should be able to participate and make a democracy work? And for a political party to be hijacked by individuals who are throwbacks to the 1940s is not only appalling, it's a sad state of affairs for that political party.
DeSantis has called your travel advisory a joke. How do you respond?
Well, many of the policies that he has pushed through the legislative bodies and adopted were all stunts to raise his profile in his quest to become the president of the United States. Much of what he's doing will not change the quality of life of Floridians. Much of what he has done will not expose children so they can be competitive in a global work environment intellectually. Much of what he's done has nothing to do with the quality of life of Floridians, but everything to do to increase his profile so he can become president of the United States. Those were the stunts at hand. We only responded to say what you are doing can and will cause harm to our young people, to individuals who are citizens of the state of Florida, who actively engage both civically and economically, and you are seeking to harm them. That's not a stunt. What he has done is the stunt.
While I have you, during the Biden administration, what is your view of the state of Black America? What do you think? Where does Black America stand now under a Biden administration? Is it doing better than under former President Trump's administration?
Well, there is a different level of ease under this administration because of the growing threat of white supremacist activity during the Trump administration that was not being held accountable. And that was concerning not only for the African-American community, but for the Latino community, for the Jewish community, because we began to see more and more incidents of individuals and groups bubble up with a level of boldness, spewing some of the most racially, ethnically, and religious hate language than we had seen in decades. And fortunately, under this administration, there is some level of those individuals and groups being held accountable, and we're seeing less activity, but it's nowhere near where it should be. So for African Americans, there is a sense of ease. Economically, we have the lowest unemployment rate than we've had in the history of this nation. There is a lot more to be desired to close the equity gap. I think this administration did a great job in addressing and continue to address the student loan crisis. That wasn't an African-American crisis. It was an American crisis because that level of debt is a super debt. You cannot discharge it in bankruptcy, and it impeded a lot of citizens, Black and white, male and female, young and old, from really appreciating a quality of life because they were saddled with so much debt. So with this administration, at least there is an openness to pursue a course of action that could improve the quality of lives of African Americans and many other citizens, despite the current economic picture, broadly speaking, as a result of a global phenomenon.
Is there anything that you hear from these GOP presidential candidates who've entered the race so far that appeals to the NAACP? Is there anything you're hearing?
So I want to start by saying we are nonpartisan, but we are monitoring the political activity. And I will hope at some point that there will be candidates to emerge within the Republican Party who resist the temptation to appeal to the lowest common denominator of humanity through othering, and really talk to policy issues that would address concerns of all Americans in a way in which it starts from the middle and out, and not only spout policies to benefit the top 1% of this nation economically. So we're waiting to see a candidates to emerge. We have members of our national board and members across the country who are active or registered Republicans, African Americans, and we've always had that. But unfortunately, it feels like the political party has been hijacked by a set of interests who's more concerned with using race as a tool to protect profits and not tax the most wealthiest individuals in this country, as opposed to bring more people together and right-size the economic picture.
Right now, you have Republican Senator from South Carolina, Tim Scott. He's entered the race. He is a Black American. What do you think about the campaign and the tone of the campaign that he launched?
Well, it's too early to talk about tone of his campaign. And Senator Scott and I, we've talked on several occasions. He's a very nice guy, and I wish him well. And I hope he's not pushed into the corner of playing to the lowest common denominator. It's been my experience in talking with him that he's open. He recognized the problem with racism in this country. And so we're going to watch to see how his campaign unfolds. And for those things we agree with, as I've done with him, he's done with me, we really lean into those conversations. And the things that we disagree with, we accept that we approach this from two different points of view. And that's what it's supposed to be, because we are nonpartisan, and much of what's taking place has very little to do with partisanship, has everything to do with using othering as a tool to advance one's agenda or political standing, which should be outside of the bounds of how we as Americans should be engaging in the public square.
Well, DeSantis he's been pretty public about his effort to erase traces of wokeness, that's what they call it, in Florida's K through 12 and higher education institutions. How would you define woke or wokeness? What does that mean to you? Because sometimes you have the GOP or people within the GOP, and Tim Scott, I haven't heard him talk about erasing wokeness, but you have people in the GOP talking about this. This has become a buzzword in those circles. What does it mean to you? Because frankly, I'm unclear about what exactly they mean by that.
You know, the many who subscribe to using buzzword to max racial dialogue oftentimes come up with phrases and statements. And if you ask them, what does it mean or what is it, they couldn't describe it, whether it's critical race theory, wokeness, or air quote urban. But those are racialized buzzwords that's devoid of true definition and more code for anti-Black or anti-ethnic or anti-Jewish or anti-Latino. Buzzwords, devoid of true meaning. And so when I began to see those type of buzzwords or phrases emerge, what it means to me and what it means to them could be two completely different things, but the awareness of what it means to them is key, because those are nothing more than racialized buzzwords.
Well, in fairness, the term woke It was used first by progressives.
Oh, the term woke, as described by progressive, based on my understanding, is being aware, enhancing your knowledge, not assuming or accepting traditional norms as is going to be the reality of the current or the future. Wokeness also means being inclusive, being aware that the diversity of our democracy is only strengthened when individuals who are part of our democracies have a grasp of their center of gravity as it relates to history. That Native Americans can place themselves in the building and development of this country, and they can see themselves as whole humans and not victims to the atrocity of genocide. That women can see themselves and their contributions to the development of this country and not simply be seen as individuals who are marginalized, denied the ability to right to vote until the 20s. That African Americans, that we can see ourselves in the development of this country and the future of this country, and that we have contributed to this nation and will continue to do so, and come into the table fully aware of those contributions so that we are empowered to provide more contributions. That was the original conversation about being woke, being aware. That's a beautiful thing. That talks about this American experience in a more holistic way. How that has been flipped on its head by conservative movement is something to be studied, because we've seen it before, taking words and buzz phrases to racialize them just to get people to react to it, even if it's devoid of meaning.
Derek Johnson, president of the NAACP, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
More than 40 million Americans are expected to travel this Memorial Day weekend. Travel expert extraordinaire Peter Greenberg joins us now. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be with you, Jeff.
All right. So if I'm traveling this summer season, beginning with Memorial Day weekend, should I go by car, train, or plane? What do you think?
Well, here's the interesting development. Seasonality is gone from travel now. We've changed our lifestyles to make it a way of life as opposed to once a year travel. And while Memorial Day weekend is traditionally the unofficial kickoff to summer, anybody traveling now would tell you the planes have been full all year anyway. That's not going to change throughout the rest of the summer. We're looking at forward projections that indicate that will not subside for the rest of 2023. And what's even worse, airfares are not going to come down, and neither will hotel rates. It's going to be a very tough summer, and yet we all want to travel.
You just said something really interesting, that Americans have changed their travel habit. I'm assuming you mean travel habits post-pandemic, because obviously during the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, there are a lot of people who changed how they live, how they work. Are we also changing how we travel?
There's been a quantum change, because one of the things that happened during the pandemic, whether we realize it or not, whether we were conscious of it or not, is that so many of us came up close and personal to our own mortality. Either we got COVID and survived, or we know people who didn't. And it changed the way we approached our purchasing habits, let alone our travel habits. And as a result, we were less interested in material items. We wanted to buy experiences. There was a ticking clock involved. And so when we could travel, we came out of the gate charging. And we weren't as price sensitive about it either. We were devoting our resources just to buying those experiences without necessary regard for how much it was going to cost. And that's one of the reasons why we're seeing such high fares. The loss of supply and demand has kicked in, not seasonally, but for the rest of the year.
Can we trust the airlines to get us where we need to go?
Well, we can't really look at that in a one-dimensional way, because it involves air traffic control, it involves scheduling, and then, of course, the intangibles such as weather. But let's talk about what's under the airline's control. We'll start with scheduling. The argument can easily be made that a lot of airlines are publishing schedules that they must know when they publish them they can't really support. Especially for people who are doing connecting flights. Anytime an airline publishes a connecting flight with 33 minutes between flights, that's ridiculous. The other day, I was on a flight, a very full flight. As a matter of fact, every flight is full these days. And when we got to the gate, we had 180 passengers on a Boeing 737. When we got to the gate, I waited for them to open the airplane door, and then I took out my stopwatch, and I timed how long it was going to take, on average, for everybody to get off the plane. The answer, 23 minutes. How do you publish a 33-minute connect time when it takes you 23 minutes just to get off the plane, and that presumes the plane arrived on time? And that doesn't even include baggage connecting. So we have to get back to a more realistic approach to scheduling. And until the airlines do that, we have to do that, meaning don't give yourself any less than 2 hours of a connect time between flights, or you may not get to where you're going, because if all the planes are full, even if you miss that second connecting flight and the airline wants to put you on a third one, that plane's already full.
Are there destinations that people are choosing over other destinations this upcoming summer travel season and Memorial Day weekend, for that matter?
Well, Memorial Day weekend traditionally is a time when people stay within about 100 miles of where they live. They're not doing big, long trips. But for the rest of the summer, Americans are following the power of the U.S. dollar against so many foreign currencies, whether it's the euro, the British pound, the Turkish lira, the South African rand, the Argentinian peso, where you can get effectively a 30 to 40% discount on your travel costs once you land there. It's that good of a discount about basic goods and services that they cannot adjust for foreign currency exchange, because it's what the locals have to pay anyway. Airfares and hotel rates can be adjusted, but a tube of toothpaste, a dinner, a cab ride, a clothing, anything you want to buy there, that can't be. So we're in the driver's seat this summer in so many destinations, as long as we can afford the actual airfare to get there.
What about overseas travel? Are you seeing more Americans going overseas?
The answer is a resounding yes, as long as they can get their passports renewed in time. And the reasons are twofold. One, it's an outgrowth of the pandemic, where people were looking for alternatives in terms of their destinations, where they had freedom to breathe, space, remember social distancing. Yes, the answer is they're looking for that, but they're also traveling more overseas for another reason. So many Americans now are considering moving there permanently to basically work from anywhere and taking that literally. So you're seeing countries like Portugal, places like the Maldives, and many other countries offering different visa approaches, very much more relaxed and allowing Americans to move there without many restrictions.
Peter Greenberg, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jeff.
75 years ago, a CBS newsman was murdered.
That's the getaway car. It's swinging around to make a run for it.
Shot in the back of the head.
The muzzle of the gun held firmly against the base of his skull.
Bound at his hands and feet.
The body was fully clothed.
Tossed, still breathing, into the sea.
A 34-year-old, tall, lean, blonde American, full of courage and an insatiable appetite for truth.
His name?
This is George Polk, reporting from Athens.
But who killed him, and why?
They said to him, you can't say those things in the Civil War.
In the Greek Civil War of the late 1940s that pitted a U.S.-backed government against communists, George Polk was determined to get Americans both sides of the story.
Irritating both to Washington and to Athens.
He wrote me that I'd like to get to the people who count.
I'm afraid for this trip. I really am afraid.
This was a very conspiratorial political assassination.
News of Polk's murder shocked the world. The man known as the father of American intelligence stepped up to investigate.
General Donovan's real loyalty and real affiliation was still with the CIA.
He said specifically, we are in a war.
Witnesses answered that the communists must have done it.
But early on, there were doubts.
He said, you'll ruin your career if you keep up this line of inquiry.
An innocent man was sentenced to life in prison.
I tried to commit suicide twice.
Decades later, evidence would point to another motive for the killing, a secret New York bank account, and a vow by our reporter to expose it.
I think he paid for that remark with his life. I really do.
There are many unsolved questions surrounding this case. It may be that the full story will never be told.
But we'll tell it here. I'm Stephen Portnoy, a CBS News radio correspondent, just as our late colleague was. And in this program, I'll bring to light an infuriating story of injustice, international intrigue, and a Cold War cover-up involving the CIA and the press.
There were many missing links and missing persons.
It was a targeted attack on a journalist, a story that echoes today.
Those of us who knew George and worked with him can never cease to be concerned about his murder.
Who do you think killed George Polk?
This is George Polk reporting from Athens. Now back to CBS New York.
What you just heard was the trailer for a new CBS News Radio audio documentary about the murder of George Polk, a CBS News reporter. CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy investigated the mystery behind the unsolved murder. Stephen, thanks for coming on the program. This mystery has gone unsolved for 75 years, so why has it been so difficult to find the person or people responsible for Polk's death?
In part because of the passage of time. 75 years since our man, George Polk, was murdered in Salonika, Greece, a city now known as Thessaloniki. It's Greece's second largest city, just next to Athens. And the investigation in 1948 and 1949, ultimately the trial, was, for all intents and purposes, under Greek law, the final word. We describe in our program how an innocent man was tortured into making a false confession. He implicated himself and two other men in the crime. Those two men who I'm talking about were tried in absentia. They never appeared in court, and there was no one to corroborate the confession. This man, Gregory Stektopoulos, is now known in Greece as a victim of all this, but it's been very difficult for him to have his name cleared. He died in 1998, and under Greek law, there's no recourse here. This man, Gregory Stektopoulos, had his sentence commuted. Ultimately, he was released from prison. But the whole idea here is that an injustice was done, not just to George Polk, who was murdered by people who got away with it, but also to Gregory Stektopoulos, who was sentenced to life in prison and spent more than a dozen years behind bars for a crime he didn't commit.
Tell us more about George Polk. Who was he?
George Polk was this network's first Middle East correspondent. But prior to that, he was a widely read newspaper reporter who traveled the world. He grew up in Fort Worth, Texas, described as a 6-foot-tall, blonde, lean figure who almost looked like the movie star of the day, Errol Flynn. I describe him in our report as someone who sort of, based on the pictures, looked like Ryan Gosling. CBS newsman Edward R. Murrow identified George Polk's reporting in the newspapers and had him hired to be the network's first Middle East correspondent in 1946. He traveled from Cairo to his bases in Jerusalem, where he was covering the early days of the war for Israeli independence. And he wound up in Athens because at that time, it was the nascent days of the Cold War. And the Soviets were trying to expand their influence across Eastern Europe, and they'd taken over a number of countries and turned them communist. And Greece was, in 1947, the front that pitted East versus West. The United States, under President Harry Truman, committed $400 million to support the Greek government, which was viewed by Polk, rightly, as right-wing and corrupt. Polk had reason to believe that the Greek authorities were hoarding American aid dollars, and that plays a role, in our report, in his murder.
It's really an incredible story. And from what I understand, you're doing it in three parts.
It's a three-episode story. Really, we talk about who George Polk was, how he was killed, the investigation that involved the father of the CIA, a man named General Wild Bill Donovan, who was brought into the case by American reporters. The great Walter Lippmann, who was one of the most influential figures in American journalism in the early to mid-20th century. Donovan comes into the story on behalf of the reporters to get to the bottom of the case, to oversee the Greek investigation and assure American reporters that it was all being done in the proper way, because Polk had been critical on the air and in print of this right-wing Greek government. And the American reporters here were very concerned about the Greek investigators finding who killed him. So General Wild Bill Donovan, who founded the Office of Strategic Services, the forerunner to the CIA, was tapped by these newsmen to go to Greece. In the end, our experts believe that Donovan played a significant role in a U.S. government cover-up, sitting by, idly watching, as our innocent victim of this story, Gregory Stachopoulos, was tortured into making a false confession and ultimately sentenced to life in prison.
George Polk's family, how have they, his now descendants, how have they handled the investigation into his death to date?
George Polk died without having any children, but he did have a younger brother who was 17 years younger than him, a teenager growing up in Texas, as George Polk was a network newsman traveling all over the world. That younger brother, William Polk, who just recently died of only a few years ago, spent the rest of his life from 1948 all the way up until his death in 2020, trying to get to the bottom of what happened to his beloved older brother, whom he looked up to, idolized. And William Polk, who was the younger brother, went on to great renown as an academic, as an author, as a U.S. government official, and ultimately, it left him, his daughter told me, with a deep wound. This idea that not only did he lose his older brother in a vicious murder in the middle of a violent civil war in Greece, but beyond that, he was aware of the fact that the U.S. government essentially had a blind eye to the false confession that was advanced by the stooge, Gregory Stachopoulos, and the American government really didn't do anything to get to the bottom of who actually killed his brother. And it may be that the right-wing government of Greece that was backed by the American government had something to do with it. And that weighed on William Polk for the rest of his life.
How does this story, 75 years ago, connect the past with the present in your view?
I'm so glad you asked that question, Jeff, because I think it's why I sought to tell this story, which, by the way, after 20 years in network news, I was not fully aware of until about 6 months ago. And it was in a dive into our CBS News archive that where I found this story and said, this is something that I think has modern echoes and is worthy of being brought to light today. And it's because of the rising threats that journalists face all over the world, including here in this country. The Committee to Protect Journalists says that last year, 67 journalists and media workers were killed, a 50% increase on the year before.
What is George Polk's legacy? Because he has a legacy in this business. In fact, one of the highest honors is an award named after him. Talk about his legacy in journalism.
After George Polk's death, which shocked the country and the profession of journalism in 1948, an award was established in his name, and it's given out every year at Long Island University. And it honors courageous journalism. Hundreds of people have won this George Polk Award in the last 75 years, including people such as Joan Didion, Walter Cronkite, Woodward and Bernstein. Almost any journalist of note who has done really significant work for the American people has taken home this George Polk Award. And that is the most significant lasting legacy in the way that his name carries on for three quarters of a century. But I think it's important to help the country understand who this man was, what he was doing, how he and why he was killed, because it really just brings it to the fore, this idea that journalists do their work to help Americans and other free people govern themselves. And in part, the essential work is to shine light on the dark corners, on powerful people who are using the public's money and using the power that they've been given by the people to do things. And it's essential for a free functioning and healthy democracies for that light to be constantly shown. George Polk was trying to do that, shining a light on how American aid dollars are being spent in Greece. And ultimately, many experts believe that's what led to his death.
Well, it is great work on your part, as well as Greg Swagler, who is the CBS News Radio Vice President and General Manager, but also the executive producer of this program. Cannot wait to listen to the documentary, which if you're listening to this interview, you should know that you can find it at cbsnews.com/Polk, or it's available on your favorite podcast app. Stephen Portnoy. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jeff.
That is America Changed Forever for this week. Thanks to Paul Woody Woodhull and District Productive. Don't forget to check your local listings to see when ACF airs in your community. For now, I'm Jeff Begays, and that is how America changed forever.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to America Changed Forever ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.